Ryan Andrews. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Okay, it's my favorite subject, food, and I love talking about food. And I just found out that I am going to be participating in a number of workshops on May 12th at the Brooklyn Food Conference. Have you heard about the Brooklyn Food Conference? There's going to be over 175 workshops, 350 panelist speakers, and lots of exhibitors. It's a full-day event. And let's see, it's May 12th. Obviously, it's in Brooklyn. And it's at the Brooklyn Technical High School. Starts at 8:30 in the morning, and it goes till 6 p.m. And I'm going to be involved in two workshops. One is at 12:30, and it's called Corporate Power, Diet, and Animal Agriculture. You know I like to talk about those things. And then later on at 2 o'clock, I'll be involved in a workshop on women, feminism, and the use of animals for food. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a really interesting time talking about my favorite subject, food. And then, oh gosh, there's so many things going on May 27th in Manhattan. My nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, will be exhibiting at the Veggie Pride Parade, and that is a really, really fun event, Veggie Pride Parade. You can go to veggieprideparade.org to find out more about that. Okay, now let's really get to the fun stuff here, and I'm going to bring on Ryan Andrews, who has a new book out called Drop the Fat Act and Live Lean. He is a registered dietitian and strength and conditioning specialist who completed his education in exercise and nutrition at the University of Northern Colorado, Kent State University, and Johns Hopkins Medicine. He's written dozens of research articles on nutrition, exercise, and health, authored Drop the Fat Act and Live Lean, and co-authored The Essentials of Sport and Exercise Nutrition Certification Manual. Ryan is currently a coach with Precision Nutrition, offering life-changing, research-driven nutrition coaching for everyone, and you can find out more about that at precisionnutrition.com. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure. I had fun reading your book.
Good. Hopefully you did. I hope anybody who reads my book has a good time.
Yeah, well, there's certainly an attitude in this book about fatitudes.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, the first thing that I like is that you're not afraid to use the word fat.
Yeah, so many people kind of get hesitant to use that word, and I really just mean extra body fat, because mm-hmm. we have a lot of ties to the word fat, whether it's related to somebody's morals or their productivity in life or whatever it might be. But I really just mean, you know, fat is what fat does, and fat means extra body fat.
And we don't need it.
Yeah, it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
We can control it.
I was just reading an article in New York, I think it was a blog post, Tara Parker Pope was talking about how a lot of people see themselves in the mirror and don't really see what they look like, or don't really think of what they look like, and then they see themselves in the mirror and it's like, whoa, who is that fat person?
Yeah, well, our comparative, the people we compare ourselves to in this country are all fat as well, so it's really tough to get an idea of what's normal. I mean, normal in this country is overweight.
Yeah, that's right. I often hear people saying, oh, that person's so thin. And I think, they're not thin. They're
yeah.
just right. All
right.
of you are just, your scale of things is so off.
Yeah, exactly.
Normal is not good.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Normal's not a good thing right now. We best be abnormal with our eating and our exercise and our habits.
Right. Now, how did you get so smart, Ryan?
I get so smart. Well, fortunately, I have, I think, a pretty good blend of life experience. I've been helping people with eating and exercise since I was about 14 or 15 years old, and then I learned that I could go to college and actually study this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there and got a formal education, did grad school, became a dietitian, and I coach people now with eating and exercise, and I think between all my personal experience and formal education, it's a really nice mix, and I can really get an idea of what actually works for people, not just what the textbook says, but what works in real life.
Well, this is a quick book. It's easy to read. There's lots of cute cartoons and humor in it, and it's just a lot of common sense. So I dog-eared a number of pages, like I typically do when I read something. And the first thing I'm looking at is you have some rules, and I'm going to read some of them. Don't eat while reading or watching TV. Don't eat while driving. Sit down at a table to eat. Don't eat dessert before dinner. Eat your vegetables. Go outside and play with friends. Don't stay up all night. And from reading this list, I was thinking of a show I had a few weeks ago where I was talking about a woman who wrote a book called French Kids Eat Better. And in France, in their culture, this is all part of their culture. And it may be changing, unfortunately, because our bad habits are spreading rampantly around the world. But you don't eat while driving in France. You don't eat in the car. The cars don't have those, at least not when I was there in the 90s, didn't have the coffee cup holders.
Yeah.
And you sit down at a table. It's an event where you gather around and... You don't eat on the run. You don't eat the snack foods. You sit down and eat properly. And it's part of the culture. And somehow our culture got away from this because I think we did all of these things traditionally at least 50 years ago. So we've really gotten off base. And it's important to see a list like this and say, oops, 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 yep, uh-huh.
Yeah.
How do people react when you give your clients a list like this?
Yeah, it kind of comes back to what we were just talking about with social norms. I mean, this is a lot of people do eat when they drive, and they go to fast food, and they don't go outside and get fresh air and get in the sun and all those things. And it's strange for people to really grasp this because I think as a kid, maybe they sort of understood it when they were learning about basic health in school. But as they get older, we get into kind of the whole typical adult mindset, and we don't treat our bodies as well. I think one of the best things we can do as adults is kind of treat ourselves like kids. You know, give ourselves some basic foundational guidelines with eating and with exercise, and try to follow them. If our kids acted like we acted with our eating and exercise, we'd ground them and send them to their rooms. But we allow ourselves to do it.
I'm just thinking of all the excuses that people must give you when they see some of these rules, like don't eat while driving, like I don't have time, I'm in such a rush in the morning, and I have to eat in the car.
Yeah. the excuses, I try to actually listen to them and not just disregard them and say, oh, no, you're wrong, mm-hmm. You have time. But I always challenge people to think about what they really value in life. What do you really care about? And if you really do care about maybe working downtown and commuting, and so you're spending a lot of time in the car and you're working a lot of hours, well, then maybe you will have to eat in your car. But if you really say, you know what, a number one priority in my life right now is good nutrition, and that means more to me than working a few extra hours at my job, then maybe you could talk to your boss and restructure your day and your schedule and spend 30 minutes at home and eat breakfast before you leave in the morning in your car. So kind of stepping back and looking at the bigger picture and really trying to live according to what you value most.
You have some good quotes in here, and what I like is most of them are quotes I haven't seen before. There's a lot of vegetarian and vegan health books out today, and that's a good thing, but many of them regurgitate the same quotes, and I'm kind of tired of seeing them.
Yeah.
You have one here by George Bernard Shaw. I am oppressed with a dread of living forever. That is the only disadvantage of vegetarianism.
Yeah, my editor, the book publishing company, was great. They helped me find that one, I remember.
And George Bernard Shaw lived to 94, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, he lived a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he knew what he was talking about.
Right.
Huh. Okay, let's see, what else did I bookmark here? Okay, I bookmarked something about mixing it up and the athletes here, but I'm not quite sure why I did it here. Oh, yeah, I like what you write here. Okay, exercise is certainly important, and I really appreciate how you talk about making it fun, not really doing something that you don't like to do, because then you won't do it, obviously.
Yeah.
And the side effects of exercising include, and it's funny when you have to put it this way, side effects include, because we're always hearing about all the drugs on television and all the side effects you get. But the side effects of good eating, the side effects of exercise, more energy, less body fat, more strength, serious flexibility, big biceps if that's what you're looking for. And it's all good. Those are good things.
Yeah, when, you know, it's, people forget when we live a certain way, we look a certain way. And so, you know, we're working with laws of nature here, and when we participate in movement and physical activity and we lift weights and move our bodies and stretch our bodies, things happen to our body. And with exercise, fortunately, it's a lot of positive things that a lot of people strive for.
Okay, so you work with a lot of people. What are some of the, I'm going to ask two things here. What things really work with most of them, and what have been your biggest frustrations?
I would say that one of the things that works really, really well is focusing on changing one thing at a time. So instead of trying to do a complete life overhaul and adopting a whole new meal plan and diet and joining a gym and exercising every day, depending on where that person is at, just picking one thing and focusing on that for maybe 2 or 3 weeks and really solidifying it and making it part of your daily life, and then moving on to the next habit. That is really, really useful. And another thing that's really useful is getting back to hunger and fullness cues. Mm. It's so often forgotten in the world of weight management and body fat and diet books, because they say eat this many calories, eat this much protein, carbs, eat at these times, eat these portion sizes. But that's disregarding our own intuition with eating. And when people can really get back to their idea of, I'm hungry, I'm not hungry, I'm satisfied after eating, here's what I'm really craving right now, when people can really be accurate and grasp those concepts, it can do wonders for their nutrition, because they don't feel cheated out of foods they're really craving, and they can adjust what they're eating based on what they're actually hungry for.
Right. Okay, so then the next question is, what's been the biggest frustration? The ones that don't get it or have such a really hard time making the changes?
The biggest frustration, I would say, for me as a nutrition exercise coach, is when somebody identifies a priority or a value and they say, you know what, I really do care about my health and I want to make changes to my eating and my exercise, but they don't act on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really frustrating for me, because it's one thing if somebody doesn't care about it. They say, oh yeah, I want to eat better, but they don't really care about it. Oh, that's fine, no big deal. But when somebody really wants to form a new identity and build new habits and they can't quite make it happen, that frustrates me, but it also, I guess, energizes me to keep learning more about how to work with people better and counsel people and get them past that ambivalence, because, yeah, that's the ultimate frustration as
yeah.
a coach.
Well, you hit on so many different things. It's not a big book, but you touch on a lot of really important things, and so I think many of us have discovered that problems with weight are related to so many different things. Certainly we've gone down the wrong road when it comes to food, and our whole culture is just so messed up. We don't know anything about food. We don't know how to prepare food. We've totally bought in to believing we need to buy things in a box mm-hmm. and eat in restaurants and make it convenient, 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 when it really isn't convenient.
Yeah.
And we've really been marketed and bought into this whole thing that isn't healthy for us. Okay, so we've lost some sort of intuitive knowledge of how to feed ourselves. But then there's all these other issues. You mentioned addiction to some of the foods that people eat, and then all kinds of emotional issues.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are two biggies. You know, a lot of processed foods have been engineered so we keep eating them. And I don't take it lightly when somebody says to me, Ryan, I can't stop eating junk food X.
Mm-hmm.
I believe them. I really believe them when they say that. I don't just kind of blow it off and say, yeah, you know, get some more self-control. Just, you know, tough it out and stop eating. It's tough. I mean, these things are some of these processed foods are really, really powerful. So I think food addiction is massive. I think it's a big issue, and I think people managing their feelings with food, I mean, ties into that a lot. I remember working with a client, and she was eating junk food every day at work and drinking soda every day at work. And she finally realized one day, she said, "Ryan, I'm eating junk food and drinking soda every day because I hate my job. It's boring, and I'm looking for stimulation." So food was her form of stimulation and enjoyment for the day. So it starts to bring up bigger questions like, how's your career and how's your family life and are you following your passions and volunteering? Because if those areas of life suffer, food might serve as a temporary escape. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big issue.
So you're like a shrink.
I think about that more and more, how I wish I would have went to grad school for psychology rather than nutrition, because I use nutrition science very little.
Oh, you're right. Okay. Well, maybe you need to add that. I'm surprised that that's not a bigger profession, that more people aren't into that, the psychology of food. It's just so big.
Yeah, I think it's going to expand. I think it's going to get a lot bigger.
Okay, so now one of the things that you mentioned, that just a lot of things I was going, oh yeah. But the excuses. So one thing is not having the bad food in your home, and yet people will come up with all kinds of reasons why they still have the bad stuff in their home, like their kids need to have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that all the time. Ryan, I have to buy junk food X for other family members.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't. If you don't think it's a good idea to buy a certain food, don't buy it. I find that people who play that family card are really ambivalent about making their own food changes a lot of times, and they're kind of using it as a reason to still kind of get their own fix with that food. But yeah, I think I always tell parents, you know, if you genuinely you don't want to feed yourself this food, don't buy it for other family members. It's a terrible idea. If a food is in your house, you're going to eventually eat it at some point. So, yeah.
I've heard that too with women in particular, older women who feel like they need to make meals for their husbands,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to get on a healthy path, but they still know that they have to cook for them. And how do you handle that type of situation?
Ooh, yeah. Meal preparation and relationships, it's mm-hmm. tough. It's I try to go step by step with this one and try to find the common foods that the couple or the people in the relationship are eating and really try to go from there. I mean, because if every part of the meal, every component of the meal is different, it can be tough. It might lead to one spouse making a completely new meal. But if you can find some common foods you both enjoy, build from there. You know, have those more often in your regular meal routine, that type of thing. But, yeah, because I'm not a big fan of just saying, you know, cut them off and force them to eat what you like. Everybody changes at their own speed, so.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, in some ways I think if you're in a relationship and somebody wants to eat healthier to improve their own health, let's say they're in a health crisis and they really need to make a change, the other partner really should be loving and supportive and go along with it. I mean, I'm a big fan of Dr. Furman. I know you showed one of his graphs in your book. And I know when he talks about when children have a health issue, the whole family's got to eat the same way that one child does. All the other siblings, you have to make it, you have to be supportive. And sure, that's the ideal, but it's hard to make it happen.
Yeah. I mean, when somebody's health and life and longevity is coming into play and is affected, definitely I think everybody should be on board. I mean, it makes complete sense to me, but obviously not everybody sees it that way.
I also like at the end of the book how you make your apologies just in case we learn about things in the future that aren't quite right today.
That's so true. Over the years, I haven't even been involved in nutrition as long as a lot of people, but I've seen so many things evolve and change, and I already am apologizing to clients and for articles and things I've written, you know, 10 years ago that are just coming. We're coming to find out that they weren't accurate or they're just not quite how I portrayed them in the beginning. So, yeah, I made my apologies, and I'm sure I'm going to have a lot more in a few more years.
Well, just with doctors as an example, we know doctors used to promote cigarette smoking
yeah.
in the 50s or so. But there are some things that never change and that aren't going to change, and you can be confident in them. And that's this whole concept of whole, fresh fruits and vegetables, fresh, preferably locally grown, organic. And that's not going to change. Those things are what humans have been living on forever, and we know those are healthy foods, whether we know what's in them or not.
Yes, and that is one of the few things. Fruits and vegetables are, it's one of those common themes among all the different dietary groups, so like paleo and vegan and gluten-free and macrobiotic, all the different like nutrition tribes out there can agree on vegetables and fruits at least. So that's a nice common theme.
You brought up a good point here, and I'm trying to figure out how to phrase the question. So there are lots of different diet promotions out there.
Yeah.
Some of them clearly aren't healthy. I mean, we know that the low-carb, no-carb, high-protein is a recipe for disaster. But, you know, there are different diets out there that want you to have some animal protein, fish and dairy and eggs and meat, whatever, and there are different ones. Paleo certainly is one of them. And I imagine you have different clients that want to eat certain foods.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that there really isn't any science today that can prove one diet is superior over another.
Right.
But we do know that plant-based, primarily plant foods, is superior to everything.
Right.
So it's kind of, a lot of people kind of get crazy on the details, and it's really this broad message that we need to get across to everyone.
Yes, indeed. I think there's more similarities than differences. And when somebody says, you know, Ryan, I eat a paleo diet, great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, paleo isn't paleo to everybody. For somebody, it's 90% animal foods. But for somebody else, it might be 90% plant foods and then 10% of the animal foods. So, yeah, I definitely think there's are more similarities than differences in the healthiest ways of eating.
I don't think you talked about it in here, but how do you eat?
How do I eat?
Yeah.
I think I mentioned it a few times in there, but yeah, I try not to force it down people's throats. But yeah, I eat 100% plant-based diet. I've been eating 100% plant-based for about 6 or 7 years now, and I feel great. Feel better than ever. It's, you know, you don't have to worry about counting calories and protein. You just kind of get in tune with your body cues when you're hungry and when you're satisfied, and choose whole foods and things fall into place, and you get healthy and lean and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's such an important message, and God, how many diets are out there and different programs on television, the doctors and whatever, talk about different diets, and it's crazy, it's wrong, it doesn't work. Eating healthy is easy. You don't need to be a specialist.
Right.
You don't need to count crazy calories, and, you know, you give a good, really good discussion about that, and so I encourage people to, if you're struggling with weight, there's a lot of common sense, good information in here. Definitely, the whole calorie thing is, I mean, it's just stupid.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, it's amazing how a lot of people think, you know, I'm just going to count calories and I'll be set. The best calorie counters are usually the fattest people that I work with. I mean, the heaviest clients I work with know calories better than I know calories. So apparently it's not helping.
No, it isn't. And when you're not satisfied, you're going to eat all the wrong foods. The key is, and I know, you know, you can eat whatever you want, whenever you want, pretty much, if you're eating the right foods.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, very good. So, precisionnutrition.com, people should go there. What will they find?
Yeah, we have coaching programs. We have a nutrition certification program. I have articles I write. We have a whole bunch of excellent expert authors and professionals on there to get help and who write articles. So it's a really great website.
And you recommend people using a coach if they're struggling with weight loss?
I do. I think it's a good idea to use a coach.
Okay, well, there you have it. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food, and thank you for helping people drop the fat, act, and live lean.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay, be well. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me, and please visit responsibleeatingandliving.com, my nonprofit website. Have a very, very, very delicious week. Bye-bye.